All right, everyone. Welcome to tonight's episode of the Hot Widows Club podcast. I'm Crystal, and with me tonight, I have Allie, the very hot widow of Ross.
Hello.
And super special guest, all the way across the world, we have Sonia, the very hot widow of Marty.
Hi there.
Sonia is joining us from Australia, so the Hot Widows Club podcast goes international.
Amazing.
Breakthrough. We record 30 episodes and we bring on our first international widow. So Sonia, welcome.
I'm honored to be that first guest.
We're so excited. So Sonia came to us. She is one of our regular listeners who just picked up our podcast. I can't wait to hear how you found it. And reached out to us and just thanked us. And here we are today. We talk so much about meeting a widow. And when Sonia messaged us, it just felt so right. It just was like, this woman connects immediately with me. And so I instantly fell in love with you. And I told Allie, I was like, this is widow from Facebook that we keep talking to. And I really want to keep, I really, really want to have her on. And she's like, let's do it, boo.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
So before we jump into Sonia's story, talk a little bit. Sonia, if you have anything to add to this conversation, we'll give a couple updates on the HWCP. Start with Al. What do you got, baby?
Let's see here. One, we always do weather updates.
Oh, God. I'll give a weather update. So the weather in Nebraska blows balls today. So bad. It's awful. It's horrible. So Nebraska today is I don't even know how to say what to wear today.
It is so windy.
Yeah.
I just came from Hanky's T-ball game, and the kids, these are like 4 and 5 year olds. They couldn't keep their hats on. They're blowing all over the field. They don't know what they're doing. And instead of chasing the balls, they're chasing their hats. It was abnormally windy today.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was intense. I told Ben we were leaving Costco and I said, Benny, don't blow away. It was awful. So, but it's getting warmer. I mean,
yeah,
I've got shorts on today.
You do. I am freezing. I have like a wind jacket, leggings, 2 sweatshirts.
Jeez, let's talk about what happened to me. I have a rager of a headache.
Oh.
And I've had one for like 24 hours. I took a nap and then I got hot. And so I woke up all groggy.
Are you dehydrated?
I doubt it. Yeah, dehydrated plus Crystal don't go well together. I'm 120 ounces a day.
Yeah, I just usually get headaches when I'm dehydrated. I'm just trying to help you out here. I don't know.
Not judging your water intake, boo. I'm not the maker. Anyways, so let's see. My kids got baptized yesterday. Allie's kids were freaking who? Oh my gosh.
Oh,
Sonia, how old are your kids?
So I've got 18-year-old, 19-year-old, and a 16-year-old.
Awesome.
Yeah, all girls, 3 girls.
Okay. Aww. That is awesome.
Sonia, what's the weather like there?
It's actually really beautiful. I don't know whether you can see out the window. It's sunny.
It's sunny.
It's probably about 20 degrees. So I think that's your 70 Fahrenheit. Is it?
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
We're in.
Yeah.
Can we visit you?
Yeah.
Our very first Heart Widows Club podcast retreat is going to be in Australia. So
yes, you must come here to visit.
I would love that.
So the baptism yesterday, Hanky was so cute. You guys, the pastor is like talking to my kids and doing all the stuff. And Hanky, Allie's boy, is walking around trying to blow out candles.
Yeah.
It was so cute.
Oh, but what was really, really cute was during the baptism, my boys were just kind of pacing, just kind of watching what was going on. And they just felt so included, which was so sweet.
Of course they
did. During the, during it, Hanky goes up to, I believe it was Violet. I rewatched the videos and he goes up to Violet and he goes, Violet, my daddy died too. Did you know that? And it was, Violet was just like, yep, I know that. But the baptism was so sweet.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was great. It was so nice to be around your family.
Yeah.
And friends.
I hadn't seen Cindy in forever. That was the first time I'd seen her in like 6 months, besides dropping stuff off at her house when she had COVID. Yeah. I never see Cindy.
You just talk to her a lot on the phone.
I talk to her about every day. But anyways, what other updates do we have?
So while we were driving home from the baptism, I'd already told Crystal this, but I thought it was pretty cool/sad/sweet conversation I had with my boys. we were leaving dinner last night from celebrating the baptism, and Hanky, I think, is obviously realizing that Ben and Millie and Violet have also lost their dad. He said it during the baptism. But we're driving home and he's like, you know, they lost their dad too, just like us. And I said, yeah. It's like something hit him that he realized that.
It's so crazy.
I know. After all this time, he's like realizing that. And then I go, you know what's really cool is I bet our daddy and Benny's daddy are best friends in heaven. And Gus goes, oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're definitely best friends. So we're talking and Hank goes, Mommy, when are you going to die? And I said, not for a really long time. Not till I'm, let's say, 100. Not for a long time. And Hank goes, so who's going to be our mommy and daddy if you die? And I go, well, I'm always going to be your mommy and daddy's always going to be your daddy. And Gus goes, yeah, Hanky, even though daddy's in heaven, he's still our daddy.
That's right.
And I was like, yes, that's right, so Gus.
True.
And so we're talking through this and Hank goes, okay, but if you're 100 and you die, I'm not, who's going to take care of me?
Me, Crystal. That's who.
And I go, well, buddy, you're going to be older. You might be married. You might have your own kids. And Gus goes, yeah, but who am I going to live with? And I go, you're going to live with your, if you're married. He goes, I don't want to get married. And I go, okay, well, you'll live with Hanky. You guys will live together. And they're just trying to figure out this whole, like, who's going to take care of me? And again, I know this is normal probably for those that have lost a parent. You're worried about your other parent. But the conversation was just really sweet and they were really trying to wrap their minds around it. And so I said, you know, I'm going to die when I'm 100 because that's so far from now, I'm like trying to help them. And Gus, of course, is doing the math in his head. And he's like, oh, well, that's 63 years from now. And I'm like, yeah, buddy, that's a long time. And I go, so you will be older than I am now when I pass. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, hopefully you'll be like in your 70s when I pass. And so anyways, I'll stop talking about this, but it was just really neat conversation. You know, it's like they're starting to process it.
Yeah. And they're so little. Yeah.
Even my daughter, who's my youngest, is 16. Mm-hmm. She has a real fear of me getting sick.
Yeah.
Even she'll be a really concerned, and to the point where if I have a sore throat or a headache, I almost don't want to say anything because they're so fearful, you know, like, don't get sick, don't get sick.
That's crazy. So I'm 37 and I'm going to be turning 38, and Ross passed away when he was 38, and my boys know that. And so they're both like, oh, are you going to pass away when you're 38? Are you going to get sick? And it's just talking through that is hard for a kid. But yeah, they do worry at any age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I travel so much for work and my kids get really nervous when I travel.
Yeah, I bet.
It just is a really anxious time for them. Yeah, it's crazy how kids process that. I think, Allie, it's so, like, we've told the boys over and over that Eric and Ross are best friends in heaven, and it finally just clicked.
It clicked on for Hank.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it is
so
nuts.
So cute.
So I'm reading a book. It's called Reasons to Stay Alive. So it's by a gentleman called Matt Haig, I believe. And I think when you guys go through widowhood, like, it's so easy to think like everything is over. So it's not that in the true context in which someone dies, you die. But when you lose your partner, a part of you dies and you feel so lost. Right. And that's part of our mental health. That's our journey to healing and such. And so this book is a really interesting book about a gentleman who suffered through depression, anxiety, and some really tough thoughts in his life. And he puts it into perspective in such an easy, easy way. That it's all about life advice. So do you guys mind if I share some of these really cool tips that he has?
No, please.
All right. So appreciate happiness when it's there. And I think that when we're in this widowhood journey is really important to remember, because these moments that fill your heart with joy are just, appreciate them. And you don't appreciate them in the immediate time following the passing of your spouse. But looking back now, those happy times, that's what I remember in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the best. Mm. Okay. This is my favorite saying. I say it all the time. There's absolutely nothing in the past you can change. That's basic physics. What happened, happened. And we can chip away at it, like peel it back. But why? But it doesn't change anything. Nothing changes. It's simply we can only do better at 555 than we are at 554. That's it. And so that's a really important piece of advice for me. Don't feel guilty about being idle. Wink, wink. To my girl on the go.
I struggle with that.
You do too. Oh, yeah. You guys are going to connect so much.
I can't sit still. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, me too.
What do you do, Sonia? So what do you do to stay busy all the time?
I just can't stop. In fact, my kids are like, just stop. Just because Marty was my leveler. He would like, come on the couch. Let's relax. Let's watch TV. And I think it's the art of distraction. I'll do anything. I'll swim. I'll do the gardening. I'll cook. I'll think of a chore to do. I just don't sit still. And I think it wears you down after a while.
Oh, my gosh. Very worn down.
And the stillness isn't always peaceful because that's when your mind races.
Exactly.
I think that's why I do it.
Yeah.
Same.
Yes.
I don't want to think about it.
So what he says is more harm is probably done to the world through work than idleness. But perfect your idleness and make it mindful. I don't really know what that means, but I think make sure your idleness is, it's got a purpose behind it. Go for a run, then do some yoga. Be kind. Look at trees, be near trees, and plant trees.
Oh, I love trees. That's a good one.
Okay, alcohol maths. Wine multiplies itself by itself. The more you have, the more you are likely to have. And if it's hard to stop at one glass, it will be impossible at three.
Good thing I'm not a wine drinker.
Oh, no. This one is harder because I don't know if that his situation is like ours. But if someone loves you, let them. Believe in that love and live for them, even when you feel there is no point. Mm. So a lot of people love us. We've got to live for them, too. I think that's what we think about our kids that really help us through these moments.
So. Yes. Living for them.
Anyways, there's so much more in this book. I think it's great. So if anyone wants to pick it up.
That's awesome.
I'm only like 15 pages in, so marginally endorsed by the Hot Widows Club podcast, 50% of it.
Crystal, I haven't read it yet. So far, so good.
So only Crystal has taken anything away from the book called Reasons to Stay Alive by Matt Haig.
Hey, you're reading again.
I am reading again.
So I remember your podcast on that, on whether you can read or not. And I was in the group of people that just could not pick up a book. Yes. Still can't.
It takes so long.
But audio books are good and podcasts.
Yes.
I wonder if like reading a book is like just becoming a thing of the past because audiobooks and podcasts are taking that over. And it's the way our mind works better too.
And because we're always on the go.
Yes.
Mm. We're busier than we were.
Probably. All right. Well, let's jump into Sonia's story. I want to hear so much more about you and Marty and all of the cool things that you've done. Yes. And kind of your journey.
Yeah. Okay. Well, firstly, I was saying to Ali before the show started that I just love your podcast. And it's just been the one thing really that really connected me. And I just needed to listen to it. I'm relatively new to this group.
Or
a group you don't want to join.
Yeah. Right. Not a fun club.
So I've just passed 6 months mark. So it's fairly new, I guess. And I couldn't pick up a book, as we said, but I just started listening to some things. And one of them was I wrote it down actually, the Hot Young Widows Club. Do you know that book of Nora?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And I'm figuring that your podcast is like, well, it's very similarly named. It's not the same. But I think that's who I found it. I must have been Googling because I really enjoyed her book.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how I remember how I came across your podcast, but I just started listening and it was exactly what I needed because here were some people going through exactly how I felt in a room where, so I was 49 when Marty was diagnosed, and none of my friends, they've all got their partners still. We're not old, you know. So just, you know, the little things about not reading, about renovating your bedroom. And I was doing all that anyway. And then you guys were talking about it. I'm like, oh, my God.
We are all so connected.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I've got a lot out of that.
Thank you.
So, yeah, Marty and I met, in 2000, and it was a really beautiful, quick romance. He was a bit older than me. He's like 8 years older. So I was 28 or something, and he was 36. And we met, we got engaged, we moved to London, we worked and lived in London for 5 years. We had kids really quickly. We had 3 girls within 4 years. It was crazy.
Oh, wow.
Busy.
I bet.
Yeah, no, it was busy and manic, and he worked a lot. So he'd go for work and I'd be with the kids. And I stopped working when I had number 2 or 3 because it was all too hard over there.
Absolutely.
We came back. We're from Melbourne. We live, which is another city to the south, maybe an hour by plane. But anyway, we moved up to Sydney about 15 years ago. So this is where all the kids went to school, and we've made sort of our lives here in Sydney. But it was just he's one of those guys that we had a gorgeous marriage. It was just, you know, soulmates. And
you can tell.
Yeah.
Just from looking at you and the way you feel, it just sounds amazing.
Yeah, we were really blessed with our 3 girls living here. And we were really active on the water. So I do ocean swimming. He was in a kayak. He'd always kayak with his mates down out Sydney, sort of out in within the Sydney Harbour, and really fit, really young. He was an accountant by trade, I guess, you know, really clever, has a maths brain like my daughter's. Sadly, I don't have that.
Me neither. Allie does.
I do.
Oh, good for you. Did you say your daughters do or don't, Sonia?
One of them in particular, and the middle daughter, who's just actually finished our final year of school, was last year.
Uh-huh.
She just finished that. And she used to sit around the table with Marty and they would talk mathematical equations and stuff. And the rest of us would look at each other and go, oh my God, where are we?
How neat.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is awesome. I have one daughter who does math really, really well. So Eric did math very well. Yeah. And she connected with him over math. And the other two, no math.
Yeah.
Ben might have some math. We'll see. But I am not mathematical.
Yeah. Yeah, just that's, it's been, you know, it was a great, we just celebrated actually last week was to be our 21st wedding anniversary. Aww. So that was a really sad day because it was such a quick process with the cancer. It was like 1 year, so that I have a card from Marty from last year. We just used to give cards and then maybe try and go away for a weekend. But on the day it was a card, and the card is all about how, you know, we've been there for each other and how thankful he was that I was here with his journey and that we can get through this and celebrate all the things, because I turned 50 last year. And so it was like, let's celebrate all these milestones really properly next year.
Oh.
And so it's a really hard day, that one.
I bet it was.
Yes.
Anniversaries are really tough. How did you celebrate it, or what did you guys do?
I made sure I went into the ocean, have an ocean swim. That's my happy place and my mental sort of break, I guess. Yeah. I live near Manly, and Manly here in Sydney is like an ocean marine wildlife park, so to speak. And so there are like a zillion fish. There's stingrays and there's
beautiful
little reef sharks. And it's just so gorgeous. And it just mentally clears my head, and I just feel like every couple of days I need to get in there. And
Can I ask you a question about the water? Is it cold? Like, is the water cold?
So at the moment, the water is about the same temperature as the air. So it's 70. So that's quite warm still.
It's still quite warm. The reason I ask is, so I have heard that cold water can really get your mind off of things. Like, if you're, for those that have anxiety or those that are grieving or whatever, and you just can't get your mind off of it. You just can't focus on anything. I've heard, I haven't tried this, but people have told me to take cold showers because the cold shower will kind of shock you. And then you can't think of anything else but that cold shower. And it actually kind of gives you like a natural high for a couple hours after. Yes. And so I was curious if the water that you're swimming in is kind of like that.
Well, it's not cold. Saying that, every time you get in, it still does shock your body. It's, it's not like a warm bath. It is cool. If you put your shower at like 66 or 68 degrees Fahrenheit, it would be still cool.
Yeah.
And so I think you do get, we have a little saying between the swimming friends and myself that you never regret a swim, even if you're feeling like hungover or whatever. You jump in and it just snaps. It mentally breaks. And you can't, that's the other thing, you can't cry and swim, I've realized.
that's amazing.
So you just have to, and breathe properly. So I think on so many levels, it really does help, I think. It has helped me.
That's really cool.
I ran a lot after Eric died because someone told me you can't cry when you're running. You can cry when you're lifting.
You can cry when you're running.
I couldn't.
Oh, I can't. Woo.
I can cry when I'm lifting weights, but I couldn't cry when I was running. I just couldn't get there and keep running.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I used to stop and swim and cry and then continue and go, okay, I've got to keep swimming.
Oh, yes. You do. Yeah. I love that. Oh, my God.
That's really good advice. How cool.
Yeah.
So you went for a swim. What else did you guys do?
So I went for a swim. I think I just hang out with the girls because I've got two that have finished school. So they're just at uni. So they might, and of course it's online a lot now, which is a shame, but they're home a little bit. They've all chosen to sort of stay home this year, which has been really great for me.
That's awesome.
And us, I think. Yeah. So we're all a family unit still, which is really lovely. Mm-hmm. And of course Ellie's still at school. And then actually I had a surprise visit from Marty's sister who lives in a completely different state. She did not know of our anniversary day. And I honestly feel another of your podcasts about signs.
Yes.
Yes.
Totally a sign that she called me literally the night before and said, we're traveling up from Melbourne in our car. Can we stay over one night?
Oh my God.
And I was like, that was going to be the day. And so they just popped in at about 5 p.m. and we went down. Marty's really liked wine. We have a wine cellar. So we walked in. We said, thank you, Marty. And we chose a lovely bottle of wine.
Aww.
And we had turned the candles on and had a lovely dinner. Ellie made dinner for us all, Mexican. And we just sat around and reminisced. And it was really actually beautiful because I think it would have been really sad and lonely without them because Marty's sister's gorgeous. Yeah.
Oh, I just got this super warm feeling.
Yeah. That is really special.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about Marty getting when he got sick.
Yeah. So as I said, it was only a really 12 months and it was done. It was really quick. So yeah, when I was 49, so 2021 in October, and Caitlin was just finishing her final year of school, actually, when he was diagnosed. And we were trying not to tell her, actually, because we thought we don't want to wreck her exams, you know, make her stressed. But then in the end, you know, as all things, honesty is the best policy we've learned because she found an email from one of the doctors or something like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. She, you know, because they get on your phone and
they see everything. So sometimes, Allie, to your point, the read receipts that you see, sometimes that's my kids too.
Yes.
Like they read my text. Like
big kids. They're on your phone.
Big kids are on your phone and then they open, like, I'll have to say, hey, mom needs her privacy. Can you stay out of my email or my Amazon account?
Or your text? Oh, my
text. Oh, yeah. Allie's laughing because she's seen some of my texts.
Boy. Yeah. So anyway, learned the hard way. Honesty is the best policy. And then we just, of course, had to tell them. And it was gastric cancer, but it was right on the junction of the esophagus and the stomach. So right there. And it started off with him being unable to swallow. And it just sort of course, it takes you months for the doctors to pick it up because they say, try Nexium, you know, try like a anti-acid thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
then you've got to do that. Then you've got to try the, and then you've got to have an endoscopy, and then they have to do the scans. And it seemed to take forever for them to go, actually, it's not just rubbish. It is a tumor, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, so it was, but the oncologist that Marty, we had some great friends that are doctors that recommended this oncologist in Sydney, and his words were, this is entirely curable. And so we were like, great. And I have to say, everyone I've known in my life that's had cancer has gotten through it. You know, my friends with breast cancer, mm-hmm. they've survived. And maybe I've just been fortunate. All my friends have, and my dad even with prostate cancer, you know,
wow.
or mm-hmm. my father and my brother-in-law had bowel cancer, but it's all been, we can get this and chop it out and chemo it, and they've actually all survived. Even mm-hmm. my neighbor, who's 75, had the exact same thing that Marty did, and he's happily, you know, talking to his grandkids next door.
Oh,
and
God.
So we all assumed, okay, this is shit. But we can do this. He's one of those I can do this guys. He turned vegan because Marty's had in his family some heart issues. He said, okay, I'm going to do the best thing to my health. I'm going to lose weight, get fit, become vegan. Yeah. So before this diagnosis, for 2 years, he literally ate no meat products to the point where it was almost ridiculous. I was like, it was so hard to cook. But what do you eat?
Oh, my God. Wow.
And no cheese. I mean, how can you live without cheese?
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Books.
Gosh, Marty, no. Come whatever. On.
Not living.
Right. Anyway, he was so serious. When he puts his mind to something, he totally, you know, goes. So she is part of this vegan, which actually in hindsight, when he got this diagnosis, pretty much overnight had to go, stop that. I need all the sustenance I could get because he had been losing weight. He couldn't hold his weight. Whereas beforehand, without the cancer, he could have. He just ate a lot of bread and stuff. All of a sudden, it just wasn't staying on. And so he started the journey with not much backup, you know,
sure.
physically. Yeah.
That happened to Eric. He got through transplant and he was so skinny. Between transplant and relapse, he couldn't gain enough weight to get him through relapse.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that was the start. And then, you know, even for 6 months, it was like a shit journey. So the protocol was he goes through chemo to shrink the tumor. Then they operate to cut out the tumor from the stomach. And then they do chemo again. And then that was the end of, that was meant to be the end of the story.
Wow.
Okay, so then the first chemo was fine. It was shit, you know, the chemo affects your body really badly. So going through chemo, but always was he started a blog. It's really cool. He writes really well.
Aww.
What's it called?
Yeah, can you share it?
I'll share it, but it goes on and on. He literally had quit work, so he just had time and he was just, wow, it goes on for miles and miles. It's lovely to read, but it's a trick.
That's so special you have.
Yeah, that's a gift.
Yeah, I know. But he's so positive through that whole damn blog. It's like, I'm going to cancer gym, you know, and I'm eating this and I'm just all of it. He's so positive.
Oh, Marty, you're awesome.
Yeah. And so then first chemo done, had a bit of a hiccup. We went to Melbourne for a holiday just to see the family and had a major bleed.
Oh.
And then that was in COVID for us. And Melbourne really had complete lockdown. Sydney was a bit freer, but Melbourne, lockdown. You could not, the night I called the ambulance, he could not get one for love nor money. And of course, Marty being all positive, he's like, I'm fine. And I didn't know what it was to bleed. You know, I didn't know we thought he was just getting dehydrated and he was internally bleeding, but we didn't realize. And I kick myself now and I'm like, girls, do I get a Gatorade or something? You know, it was crazy. But and he even said, I was following his lead. He told the ambulance guys on the phone, no, I'm fine. I went to the toilet, but no, I'm fine. And they said, oh, we'll send someone anyway later. And so 5 hours later, he's in and out of consciousness. And we're like, it was scary.
Oh,
the ambulance came. They took him to the hospitals just down the road, which was great. And they put a clamp on the bleed. down in there,
yeah,
and managed to catch it, which literally saved his life. He lost his whole body's worth of blood. Like, it was
devastating.
Gosh. Holy cow.
Transfusions. But he came back. He came back. Uh-huh. And he survived. And we were like, well, that's meant to be. And he wrote about that in detail in his blog. And that was really, we were like, right, great, let's carry on. Mm-hmm. So then it was, he had to, again, I think to your point, Crystal, he was so like coming off the vegan thing, go ahead and gone through chemo, going through that blood thing. And then the next stage was to cut the cancer out. Mm-hmm. So coming out of that operation was quite hard too, because he was low in everything. And then one thing happened after another, you know, then you get he got a lung infection. And
what kind of lung infection did he get? Do you remember what it was called?
Was it pleurisy or something? Was that one?
Yeah, pleurisy is a lung infection. Eric's was some fungal infection. I don't know. I can't remember what it was called, but pleurisy is a lung infection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it was that. Anyway, he managed to get out of that, but it took longer. It took more weeks than we thought after that was cut out. But we were still remaining hopeful. I don't know whether that was our oncologist. We had a really hopeful oncologist and we were sort of following his lead. Anyway, the next stage was the final chemo, and that was April, May last year. And we were like, yeah, as I said, even in our cards to each other in April, it's like, we can beat this. We can do this. We've just got the last chemo and then we can go. And it probably wasn't till the end of the chemo, final scan, that we went to the oncologist, and it was in like May or June even, and that he said, oh, the mass, there's still a mass in there.
Oh, no.
So, and basically we were told then in June, and Marty passed away in October, so it was literally months later, that his body was immune to chemo.
Yeah, that happened to Ross.
I never heard of that situation.
I didn't realize. Oh,
yeah.
Ellie.
Yeah. The first round, we had the exact same kind of steps. So Ross was going to do 12 rounds of chemo and then surgery to remove the tumor from his colon and then do chemo after to just kind of get rid of everything else.
Yes.
The first round of chemo went so well, like the first 12 rounds, but by the 12th round, he became allergic to it. Like, he couldn't have it anymore. And he was starting to have reactions, but we thought, okay, that was the 12th round. Everything had shrunk and he'll do surgery, but we couldn't go back to that chemo because that he had become allergic.
It's shocking.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a thing.
Me either.
Sonia, do you have any medical background at all?
No.
Yeah.
I don't. Me either. I've heard of friends that have oncologists that tell it like it is. And maybe we had one that was really overly confident to say it was curable in the first place. But I think Marty himself was so positive that he wanted this guy. And this guy, if anyone were to get anyone through, this young oncologist was the thing, apparently, in Sydney. And anyway, so after that, that didn't work. They said, let's start immunotherapy.
Mm.
And so Marty was like, we're really just grasping anything. And these weird and wonderful drugs that we paid a lot of money for.
Yes.
Lots.
Oh, Marty's like, let's just throw everything at it. And they were like, because he couldn't go on a trial because, I don't know, the trial specifies that if you had the tumor back within 0 to 3 months, you wouldn't satisfy the criteria, but 3 to 6 months you could. And of course, because Marty's actually never probably went, it was so, because it wasn't killed off, we didn't satisfy for the trial here in Sydney. So anyway, we paid for all these little trial drugs that have worked on other cancers in different parts of the body, but it just, nothing stuck. And Marty just continued to deteriorate probably from July to October. But we didn't realize, none of us, don't think even Marty, that it would be so quick, really, because he passed away on the 11th of October last year, which was the night before my second daughter's final year, final school exams, the night before the first one.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty traumatic. And I mean, Ali, well, I've heard your podcast on the last couple of weeks. You know, Marty really didn't want to die in hospital because he'd been in and out, as all of them had.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So his one wish was like, I want to die at home. And that was really hard, you know? But I wanted to make that happen because, you know, it's his last wish, really. Yeah, and
yeah, same.
It's never been more just down to the wire. You're trying to still run your family, trying to, you know, keep the communication go through normality. You still have to cook and feed the kids and do everything. And your husband's there and he's dying. And you're sleep deprived, like, because I'm running his medicine schedule, and he was always very confident. But at some point, the nurses, the palliative care team came through, and they said you should probably run this now because he's not going to be on it. And I have a notebook of all the time. You know, you write down all the
so many drugs,
and. They've seen it so many times. They've been there. Their care and compassion were amazing, but they're not there all the time. You know, you're the one in the middle of the night, and apparently things happen in the middle of the night, and you're dealing with it. You know, and they had a 1-800 number to call.
Yeah,
which is helpful, but you know, when you're sleep deprived, and Marty had his injection. What do you call them? Port things to put morphine in.
Yeah,
so that I could just inject stuff in, and I couldn't get in. It didn't go in, and I was panicky, and I was sleep deprived, and I was so upset. And you just felt so alone. You know, it's just so, it's all on you. And I didn't want Marty to, you know, be in pain or anything. And so they had a number to call. What also helped me, and I think Crystal, this happened to you as well. I had a friend who was a nurse, and I know you've talked about that. I think, but my friend actually also is a hospice nurse, a palliative care nurse. I called her at 3 a.m. and I said, Jo, I just can't. And she's like, I'm there. And she was here in 10 minutes and she just helped get the injection in. And but without her, I don't know what I would have done. You know, it was.
I remember in that moment when you mentioned that, Sonia, like I feel like the weight of 1,000 bricks. I remember getting out of my side of the bed to go do what I had to do. And I'd almost get paralyzed because I was so scared of what I was giving him all the time. So scared.
I was terrified. Yeah.
I mean, especially with no medical training, it's just, you don't know what you're doing. No. Just going blind. But that week, I think, and Ali, you've touched on it, it's just the trauma of that week, even in the weeks following with the funeral and just what I had to come to terms with.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. You really had to come to terms with that week because it was traumatic. Yeah. Nobody prepared you for it. I don't think you could ever be prepared. For me, it wasn't the actual death. It was that week of trauma and coming to terms with it. I don't think, honestly, I don't think I still have come to terms or it's taken a really long time. I'm more at peace with it, but I definitely was not at peace with it for a really long time.
I think you see and do things that you were just so foreign that you've never considered before in your mind. It's so not normal.
It is. It's not normal.
But it is beyond weird. It's so odd. And it feels like not only did it happen and you have to do all of those things, but you lost your sense of purpose because I was around the clock caretaker. And then I just lost my husband. And so like I have that total loss of emptiness. And then, oh, by the way, here's all these things that you have no idea how to do. And figure that out now. It's like one more decision to make, one more thing you've got to figure out.
Yeah. But the last, on when Marty passed, it was actually all the girls were around and Marty's sister, Jan, and her husband were here. And was actually, I'm pleased to say, he went really in a peaceful way, which was really lovely. I think we're lucky in that regard. It just, he took his last breaths and we were all around. So that's comforting, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is comforting. I agree with you. It is comforting that I was there.
Yeah.
And I knew he wanted me to be there.
Sonia, were there any moments in that hospice journey that you guys were able to kind of have you know, conversations about like what's next or what he wanted and his hopes for the girls and such?
I think Marty was so positive that we didn't have a lot of discussion about next things. It was weird, you know, because on some matters, a few weeks prior, he was really over it. He's like, bring my computer, let's sit down. And we had to change all the Stan logins, you know, to my email address and my passwords. And so we were really efficient with some things like that. But then other things. So Marty was in tax. He was a tax manager. You know, in your families, you divided the household a bit so that he would do all the tax finance stuff. I'd do the kids and the everything else, really. He was focused on the numbers.
Yeah.
And so it's now, as you know, everything's on you. And I'm like, oh my God, the numbers and the what do we do here? And I'm like, why didn't he just tell me and just give me something, just like heads up? But actually, everything was in a good place. I just had to sort of get my head around it, and it was all he'd set it up so beautifully that it's not a lot to do. But it just because I'm so foreign to that side of it, it's an awakening. You know, it was.
Yeah, you had to tap into your uncomfortableness, which I think we all have. There's certain things that we've had to take over.
However, Marty did write a lot, and we spent 6 months living in Italy 20 years ago together.
Wow.
No, it would have been not 20, 15, 18, whatever, when the girls were little. And he almost wrote a book, 170 pages on our life there with really funny anecdotes, and it was beautiful. Anyway, the palliative care team have a project called the Dreams Project, and they've kindly said that they will publish this book for him, for us, actually.
Oh my gosh.
Sonia, that's awesome.
I know. So we're just, they've got volunteer editors from like local journalists, you know, the ABC and stuff here. And they've all been so kind and putting the design together. It's going to be like a coffee table book, and it has really beautiful pictures and anecdotes, and we're going to have a book launch and everything. So
Will you keep us posted on that?
Yes.
We would love to share it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I will.
Yeah. Those memories will be so, I know this first, you know, 6 months to a year is tough because you're longing things. And then as it sets in that you're longing so much for those moments back. And then as it starts to set in, like it's real, this is finite. And then you start to remember things and those memories become so powerful. And those pictures that I looked at 6 months and 1 year, now I'm still looking at them. Yes, I'm still remembering all of these things, all these moments, talking to the kids all the time. And so I'm so envious. Yeah. Like Allie has a letter that Ross wrote her on her wall. And every time I see it, I'm just filled with envy that I don't have something like that from Eric. And
yeah, you've just got to be grateful for the bits and things that you do, because everyone's got something from their soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not one thing, they'll have something else.
Yeah. I'm grateful for all the things I do have.
Yeah. As to moving forward, you know, we didn't talk a lot about it, really.
Okay. We didn't either. Ross and I didn't either.
Yeah. Mm. We didn't talk much about moving forward either. He didn't. I mean, he gave me some hints of some things like he wanted the kids to do, like the skiing and make sure I kept the kids active. He wanted me to make sure that I kept them active and... But that's about it. You know, he said, be happy, but Eric was a man of very few words. Eric's smile is what just would make people melt. Like he'd walk into a room and his energy and his smile. So no words for me.
You know, one of the things I sort of struggled with was, you know, when just in the final couple of weeks, you know, I looked back and I was like, oh, I should have been with him constantly. You know, on the bed, on the couch or whatever. But then the kids needed, you know, Livy was finishing year 12. So there were like year 12 things to, you know, final assemblies and that sort of thing. And, you know, the kids still had to eat. So I was making dinners and I beat myself up that I wasn't, you know, by his side 24/7, you know.
I feel the same way. I don't know why I didn't ask for help, because I clearly needed it and I didn't. And if I would have asked for help, I could have spent more time with him.
But as a counselor, the palliative care team actually have what they call bereavement counselors, which have been really helpful for me. So I've only seen one there maybe four or five times, but I sort of mentioned that on one of some sessions, and she said he would be comforted, would have been comforted also with you, Ali. Ross would have been comforted that they saw us just keeping on going and doing what needed to be done, you know? And so he would have been sitting there going, oh, Son's all over it. She's got the dinner going and she's going to be there for the girls, you know? And that what that brings me peace, I think.
You're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, that resonates with me a lot because I had someone tell me once, like, well, you're doing all these things. Like, when are you spending time with Eric? And I'm like, I felt like I was spending good quality time with Eric. And then the same as you guys, like, I looked back and I was like, did I spend enough? And like, was I there enough? And I have resolved to, like, Eric was so proud of me and everything I did.
Yeah.
Like,
he
loved the way I took care of the kids. He loved the way I took care of my work. He was just infatuated with my output of life. And so I'm so glad to hear what you're sharing, Sonia, because I do think that Eric would have been ultimately like, what are you doing here? Why are you laying my meat? Who's taking care of our kids?
Yeah.
And so I think that it's hard to, like, it's that we can't change what happened in the past. So it's like, even though we know what's like what the future is and the reality is, it's still like, should I have been there? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we did it the best we could in, you know, in a shitty situation, really.
Yeah.
We all do. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. Tell us what it was like navigating. I know you mentioned a little bit through COVID, but your journey was through COVID as well. You mentioned your schools are still closed down. So is COVID still something that is a thing?
Oh, No. So we navigated COVID, I thought, quite well, Australia. We were, I think we were just, I don't know whether this is just my view, but that we were so far away. We're a little island down the back. You know?
Yeah.
We would escape this whole COVID thing, but no. Sydney was okay. We had a couple of lockdowns over Christmas but that year that you were hit really hard, the 2020, we took probably 6 to 9 months to it come down to us and really hit us, I think, after that. But then some cities, it was really funny because all the cities were different. So you could be in one state and be completely free to go swimming, do whatever you wanted, to go 10 kilometres, whatever, and another city could be complete lockdown, not allowed out, you know, except for buying your groceries. It just really depended where you were at and at what time of the year, because it seemed to open and close a lot for us. But schools are all, but everything's back open pretty much, except the universities. So well, I don't know whether that's what you call college, I think, unis, that I think maybe even prior to COVID or were starting to go online anyway. So they're big lectures. So I think big lectures are still largely online.
Oh, wow.
And the kids could, which I feel like it's not the university that we used to have being, you know.
Maybe it's that way here.
Talking
too.
Like an old person.
You're not old.
No.
You are not old. Oh my God.
You look great.
You do.
I'm like, you are so cute.
You are. You're beautiful. Stunning. No. My goodness.
Your accent, I want to hug you.
Oh. Well, you have to come for a hot widow's tour down on.
Yes. Sure.
You might be surprised. I bet we could get Becky and Sarah to go for sure.
Yeah.
They would love a trip too.
Well, maybe Jamie will join.
Oh, yeah. I feel like, Sonia, after, like, as you're talking, I'm hearing your story, I'm learning more about Marty. I feel like Marty sent us to you for some reason. I feel like I would have loved to have just spent a night just writing with Marty, like just like going back and forth and just spitballing ideas. And I'd love to read his style.
Yeah, I would like to read it too.
Oh.
How did you meet Marty?
And we actually met through friends. I was actually dating someone and Marty was dating someone and we used to go out as a four and we were all really friends. You know? And it's all really great. We'd like go out all the time. And I just distinctly remember my boyfriend at the time and I was quite a volatile, you know, relationship when you're younger. we had a fight once and he goes, you just want to go out with someone like Marty.
She was and right.
I was like, oh shit. Yeah. I switched it off. That's exactly who I want to be with. Yeah. Oh. Someone like Marty. Oh, and so gosh. Marty, yeah, he broke up with whoever he was going with, who incidentally, one of the nights we were at together, she came to me and she said, oh my God, I feel like I've met my soulmate. He's the one.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh, that's great. Cause I was still with my volatile boyfriend at the time. So, but anyway, he broke up with her, wasn't to be, and I broke up with my boyfriend. And then very quickly we just realized we were good together.
Yeah. The rest is history.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Much. I love that story. So Sonia, tell us about the last 6 months. Like, how has it been going?
Well, I think like Ali.
Can you let your dog know?
Yeah. I can hear him. I've got this puppy. I got a puppy too.
All right. Yeah. I can't wait to hear this. Bloody hell first. Okay. I've never used that.
He's so annoying. Oh my God. Go outside. He's beautiful. We got him in COVID. So I'm glad I had him before Marty passed away, because it's just one more thing to look after, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's one more kid.
Anyway, so he's good. He's so there for me when I come in the door. He's so happy. And that's all it's about, isn't it? So yes. I've got that.
I agree. Yeah. What's his name?
And all the girls love him. His name's Leo.
Okay.
He's a water dog. You know, like the Obama's Portuguese water dog?
I want one of those. Oh my gosh. I want one so bad.
He's not exactly the same type. He's an Italian version called Allegato Romagnolo.
Okay.
Right. And because that's a long story. Marty and I were like workshopping. We needed a dog that had Italian because my dad's Italian actually from Trieste, and we love Italy. We lived there for 6 months and we just thought, well, if you're going to get a dog, it needs to be an Italian dog. And this one loves water. We're always by the beach. He's just great. He's perfect.
Oh, good.
Oh, that's awesome. Will you ever visit these places you lived?
Well, here's a good story, Ali. Before Marty passed away, he was like the ideas guy. And he, with our group of friends, we call ourselves the table of 10, even though we're 9 now. We're 5 couples and we met each other when our kids were all in kindergarten together. And so that's been like, you know, 18 years or whatever, 16 years. And Marty made up this bucket list idea that was a bucket list before it was like not funny that it's a bucket list, you know.
Right.
When it was fun.
I didn't connect the dots at first.
You know what I mean?
Now I do. Anyway.
Our friends are from all over the world, and one of our friends is Austrian. And he said, okay, what I want to do is I want to go to Austria, but I don't want to ski in one of those posh resorts. I want to ski where you grew up. And so he arranged this whole tour, and it was the most amazing holiday with this group that we had. The next trip is we're going to another friend. We're going to have a little tour out of Italy and all stay in a villa. It was Marty's going to be 59, so turned 60 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was turned 50 last year. And so we were going to celebrate that together in this villa. And Marty organized all that. He'd chosen the villa. He'd done everything. And then he got sick. And so we had this holiday booked. And before Marty passed away, the flight came out. I was like, what are we doing with flights? And he goes, we had some booked. And he goes, you've got to keep going. You've got to keep going on this trip. And so we're going on Maddie's bucket list tour to Greece and Italy in June, in about 5 weeks.
Oh,
so we're doing it.
That is awesome.
I'm so proud of you. You have to tell us how it goes.
I'm so nervous, you know, to travel without him. And it's his trip. You know, it was his idea, you know.
You're going to feel him everywhere you go.
Yes. And accept it where it's at. Cry over him. Love him. Get on that airplane and be sad that he's not next to you, but let that happen.
Yeah,
but
cry.
Also smile and be in love with where you guys met or where you guys spent time and just everything you guys were going to do together.
But feel it all.
Feel it. Yes.
Yeah. So it's going to be filled with tears and laughter, I think. So we are going back to Italy. Yes.
Yay.
And the girls are really excited actually to have a trip. And I think what's the old option is we sit in Australia in winter and all our best friends are over on Marty's trip how can we not go?
You know? Right. You got to go.
So is it winter in Australia right now?
Oh, it's coming into autumn now. I think we've got autumn. So it will be in June, July, August is our winter.
What does winter look like there?
Probably like your summer.
Dang it.
Gets cold. I need to wear a wetsuit in the ocean. So there you go. And probably gets down to, you know, in Sydney, maybe 10 degrees. So what's that? Oh, God, I don't know. It's Fahrenheit. What, 50? 45? I don't know.
Okay.
There's no snow here.
No snow.
No snow.
Got it.
No snow. Not in Sydney anyway. I have to go into our little hills, but.
It's 55 today, probably, and 300 mile an hour winds.
Jeez.
I'm 300.
Be wearing shorts. Like,
it did get a little, I was, the only reason I put the shorts on is because, okay, here's why, honestly. It was hot when I got up, but then my daughter, who's 14, was wearing these tall white socks. And I was like, I wonder if I can pull these off. And I was like, I'm just going to podcast, so I'm going to try and wear the tall white socks.
I think they look great. They look awesome.
Thank
they
you.
Do. It's still, you know, my 18-year-old does that too with a little mini skirt.
That's what I'm wearing, yeah. So, well, I have the short shorts on. But anyways, yeah, I thought that it would be fun to try it. So I could have been more of like a 40-year-old woman and dressed appropriately.
Nah.
Thank you. That's no fun in that, right?
But anyway, you were asking the 6 months. 6 months. So I have dealt with it by mastering the art of distraction. So I am totally busy all of the time, watching a lot of TV at the end of the day. I mean, saying no to a lot of social things, but just I listened to one of your podcasts where Alison Ali, you were told to say yes to everything.
Yes. Lindsay's advice.
So I'm trying to turn that round a little bit.
Yeah. I will warn you, don't say yes to everything if you have a busy social life. Say yes to most. Like fill up 80. So
that's
I always
good advice.
Yeah, everything I do is in work. And so when I talk about utilization at work, I like to have an employee who's like 85%, 85 to 90% utilized. And so I have opportunities to give them project work and growth and development. So in grief, you know, take 80 to 85% of your time to be busy.
Right.
And the rest for project work and utilization.
Well, so a couple of times I've gone out and I've just gone out for dinner and literally in the restaurant, I've just started going, I can't do this. I'm going to go. And I just had to go.
Yeah.
The bill could not come quick enough. I just felt like I couldn't sit and talk about meaningless whatever, you know?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same.
I've been there. I call that noise. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is just noise to me. I don't want to be here, but I sit through it and suffer.
It's hard because your friends, I feel bad for my friends because they don't know whether you're coming or going, do they? Literally.
Yep.
And that, like some days you might want to talk about it, be all grievy and whatever. And other days you don't want to bar of it and you want to just talk about flippant stuff, but they never know. And you never really know what you need.
Yeah.
So it's like your head's in a washing machine, something. I don't know.
That's a great way to put it.
Great way to put it.
That is, I think that we have never touched on that. Like nobody knows when you want to, and we don't know either.
Yeah. I don't know either.
It just hits us sometimes.
But sometimes you really want to talk about it.
And it depends what social arena you're in whether that's actually possible or not. Because there's certain friends that you can really let go with and certain friends that you might just want to keep it superficial a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that might be all you need at the time. Every day is different, isn't it?
It sure is. Every day is different when you're a member of the Hot Widows Club podcast.
Thank you so much.
Anyway, we're looking forward trip.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That is going to be a blast.
That is going to be awesome. We would love to share a picture if you don't mind.
Okay. I'll put some on our chat.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you a copy of the book once it gets published and we have our book launch.
I can't wait.
We will share it.
Oh, hey, before we wrap things up tonight, I need to remind people, Ali posted on the Hot Widows Club podcast Instagram page a workout that we're challenging everyone to do in May. So it's got the jump rope component to it. So we'd love to see your pictures of you doing our workout.
Share your jump.
I saw that.
Have you tried jump roping?
I'm not that great at jump roping. You guys are, I always catch myself, but you guys would just kept it going.
You can do it. I know it.
You too can jump rope. So Sonia, yeah, I can't wait to see some pictures. I know you've sent some to us, and I can't wait to see the pictures of the trip from Italy.
Yeah, your trip.
And I also want to see some good pictures of you and Marty. And thank you so much for coming on tonight.
I've learned a lot from you.
Oh, well, I'm hoping that we'll start getting more listeners down in here, and we can make a, I don't know, have a meetup in Australia, like for all the people that are listening down here, hopefully.
Absolutely.
That
Let's do it.
Great. And we'll come visit.
Yeah.
We have t-shirts. You'll know it's us. It. Aside from the flaming red hair.
I was going to say, I couldn't miss you guys.
Most people can't. We have an energy.
Yeah.
You do. Well, thank you so much, Sonia. We've loved hearing your story and can't wait to have you back on to tell us more in like a year or so.
Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to listening to more of your posts.
I can't wait. All right, everyone. Good night from the Hot Widows Club podcast.
Thank you.
And if you would like to learn more about the Hot Widows Club podcast, please reach out to us at thehotwidowsclubpodcast@gmail.com or check us out on any of our badass socials, Instagram and Facebook.